ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Unchan chapter 2 verses 11 to 15. Verses 11 to 15 chapter 2.
श्री भगवानुवाच अशोच्यानन्वशोचस्त्वं प्रज्ञावादांश्यभाषसे गतासूनगतासूंश्च नानुशोचन्ति पंडिताः। श्रीभगवानुवाच अशोच्यानन्वशोचस्त्वं प्रज्ञावादांश्च भाषसे गतासूनगतासूंश्च नानुशोचन्ति पंडिताः। नत्वेवाहं जातु नासं न त्वं नेमे जनाधिपाः न चैव न भविष्यामः। सर्वे वयमतः परम्। नत्वेवाहं जातु नासं न त्वं नेमे जनाधिपाः न चैव न भविष्यामः सर्वे वयमतः परम्। देहिनोऽस्मिन् यथा देहे कौमारं यौवनं जरा तथा देहांतरप्राप्तिः। धीरस्तत्र न मुह्यते। देहिनोऽस्मिन् यथा देहे कौमारं यौवनं जरा तथा देहांतरप्राप्तिः। धीरस्तत्र न मुह्यते। मात्रास्पर्शास्तु कौन्तेय शीतोष्णसुखदुःखदाः आगमापायिनो नित्याः तां तितिक्षस्व भारत। मात्रास्पर्शास्तु कौन्तेय शीतोष्णसुखदुःखदाः आगमापायिनो नित्याः तां तितिक्षस्व भारत। यं हि न व्यतयन्ते ते पुरुषं पुरुषर्षभ समदुःखसुखं धीरं सोहृतत्वाय कल्पते। यं हि न व्यतयन्ते ते पुरुषं पुरुषर्षभ समदुःखसुखं धीरं सोहृतत्वाय कल्पते।
the whole of first chapter of the Gita is just Arjuna talking. In fact, Lord Krishna doesn't speak in the first chapter at all. So the chapter number one is entitled as Arjuna Vishada Yoga, the yoga of Arjuna's despondent condition. He had fallen into such a despondent condition because of his attachment to his likes and dislikes. So the raga, which is the attachment, has caused the shoka, which is the sorrow, agitations of the mind. Because of the agitations of the mind, you cannot think properly and act properly. You in fact become totally incapacitated to act. So raga leads to shoka, and shoka leads to total delusion, and delusion finishes you completely. Now, in the entire first chapter, Arjuna didn't realize that he is caught up in this problem. So he was just talking and trying to convince Krishna to leave the battle, and he was putting forth whatever logic he thought was apt in the context. Some of them doesn't look like logical sentences at all, but he just speaks from his point of view. Krishna was just merely listening to him. Then when he said, I will not fight, and kept quiet, then Krishna whipped him up in the second chapter, which is entitled as Sankhya Yoga, the Yoga of Knowledge. He whipped up Arjuna and he said, how can you behave like this in a situation like this? Kutasthva kashnalamidam vishame samupasthitam anarya jushram aswargyam akirtikaram. From where has this weakness of the heart come about in you? In a crisis. Vishama means in a wrong place and wrong time. To children you might sometimes speak very logically, and to adults you might appeal to them emotionally. It may not work. It should be the other way around. So what you do should be apt in the context. So you should have thought about all these consequences. Why we are getting to the war? Is that the only solution? After having exhausted all these other methods, is that the only method that is available to us? And what is my duty? All that you should have thought about, and then come to the battlefield. Now, having come to the battlefield, sitting here and you are getting attached to them, because of which you are suffering all this, is anaryam. Means it is not the thing done by a straightforward, honest person. Anarya jishtam. And this action of yours will not get you heaven. Aswargyam. Means you are not doing the punya activity. Punya gives you heavenly experiences. That also you will not get. In future is also not assured. That's what it means. Anarya jishtam aswargyam akirtikaram. In the present also you will lose your fame. And for a rajasic person, fame matters. If Arjuna was really a person who had escalated to the heights of sattva, then he wouldn't have bothered about fame. But Krishna knew very well that when Arjuna said, I am not interested in the kingdom and all these things, it is not as though he had moved away from rajas to sattva. He is very much in rajas, but he is caught up in confusion, therefore he is talking like that. So Krishna says, this will not fetch you fame in this world also. And then Arjuna comes back to the point and then says, how can I kill Bhishma and Drona with weapons? I am supposed to be worshipping them. If I am here, it is because of them, etc., etc. Then he categorically in verse number 5 of chapter 2 says, it is better indeed for us to go to the forest and live on arms rather than slay these noble people. But immediately in verse number 6, he expresses confusion. He says, nor do we know. Only thing is, he includes Krishna there. He thinks Krishna is also confused, but Krishna is not confused. So he says, nor do we know as to what is right in the context, whether we should kill them or they should kill us, whether we should conquer them or they should conquer us. I told you in the context here, bhiksha is a paradharma activity for a kshatriya, for a grihastha. Brahmachari is allowed. When you are a student, you are allowed to live on the earnings of your parents and the society. Once having learnt, gained the knowledge, having nourished your roots, then now it's time for you to contribute. So grahastha ashrama is nothing but contributing stage. And while working and you contribute over a period of time, having contacted the world in a dharmic way, that's why it's called as grahastha ashrama. You can contact artha and kama, means the wealth and entertainments, whatever the world offers, in a dharmic way, following the righteousness principles. Thus slowly over a period of time, your mind rises above all this, then you are able to live with frugal things around, frugality around, and you are able to focus and concentrate on something higher, simple living, high thoughts. That is the stage of vanaprastha and sannyas. Even that stage, bhiksha is allowed. Okay, so as a kshatriya, when you have not risen above and gone to vanaprastha and sannyasi stage, you have to contribute, you have to do what you are supposed to do. And sin will accrue when you give into omissions and commissions. When you omit what you ought to do and commit what you ought not to do. So as a kshatriya, if you don't do what you ought to do, which is to fight the battle and protect the righteousness, then you are omitting your duty, omission. You are giving into omission. Then as a kshatriya, you are not supposed to go and beg. Right? You are supposed to execute your duty, and whatever comes as a result should be taken as a prasad. But this guy saying, let us go and live on alms, which is paradharma, which is commissioning, you understand, he is about to do wrong things. For that also he will, on two counts, he will have to face the sin. So he is confused. The advantage, if I go to foresters, at least I will escape from the sin of killing Bhishma and Drona. Somebody is taking care of you. Everything for you is paid by them. For example, parents, and everything that was given to you patiently by your teachers. Even if you don't say thank you to your parents, at least you should not do actions which will harm them. So Arjuna says, at least I will escape from killing my gurus. But I will be doing other sin, which is begging. Living on somebody else's earnings. Begging means living on somebody else's earnings. Now, supposing I stay back and fight, then I will escape from begging, but then I will have to kill them. So he is caught in this confusion. For the first time he realizes that he is confused. When you realize that you are confused, you are blessed. 50% problem is solved. When you are suffering from a disease and you are not even aware that you are suffering from disease, you are not going to take the help of a doctor. When you are suffering from the disease and you become aware that you are suffering from the disease, then you will go and surrender to a doctor. And that's exactly what Arjuna does here. So he surrenders in verse number 7. Arjuna Sharanagati happens in verse number 7. Krishna never spoke till Arjuna said, you are my guru, I am thy disciple. Krishna is very much different from us. In our case, we openly give lectures and advice to everybody. As soon as the Gita class is over, first your servants and children, husbands and wives get their lecture. You know, you do not know how to live, you know. First and foremost is, never lecture. Swami Ramtita says, lecture to yourself, not to others. One of the reasons why we have taken up this, especially if you have the nature, in the ashram, Swamiji says, if you have the nature, whatever nature, you must do actions accordingly. Your duties will depend upon your nature. So some of us who have the nature of talking, this is not lecturing, this is conducting classes to remind yourself. Like Swami Ramtita says, lecture to yourself. You listen to it, so that at least fifth time or sixth time you start living it. It's a great opportunity, you know. So Krishna never gave advice, he just kept quiet, even though he's a very, very close friend. He just said, I don't agree with you, what you are doing is wrong. He never started giving lecture. So in 7, Arjuna says, my nature is overpowered by the taint of pity. Kartanya dosho upahata swabhavaha. प्रिच्छामि त्वाम धर्म सम्मूढचेताः शिष्यस्तेहं शादिमां त्वाम प्रपन्नम् यश्रेयस्या निशितं रूहितन्मे शिष्यस्तेहं शादिमां त्वाम प्रपन्नम्. मीन्स व्हाट? आई एम हेल्पलेस. दिस वी शुड रियलाइज. वन हाफ ऑफ माई माइंड इज सेइंग आई शुड बी इन द बैटलफील्ड, but when I decide I want to do that, the other half is coming and taunting me and saying you will be killing Bhishma, Drona, that is sinful. So then I say okay, let me go to the forest, but the other mind is coming and taunting me and saying no, be honest, you still have the mind which requires the kingdom and everything which rightfully belongs to you, not somebody else's property, so you must be honest. So what do I do? You know, few people from the class, you know, because in the academy also, Swamiji, one of the things he does is he shows us some videos and movies also, English, Hindi, Tamil, whatever, which he feels will be educative. Even some of the latest movies, in fact, one devotee took the entire ashram to this Lagan movie, Swadesh and all that. So recently, few class members said, you must watch that new movie, na, that Zindagi Na Milenge Dobara, right? I did watch it. That the last bit, if you see, he's saying you must be honest, right? It might hurt that person. There may be temporary hurt there in the relationship, but you must do it. Right? So this is the helplessness that everybody gets caught. And how many of us come honestly out, openly? Very difficult. Right? And this is the situation Arjuna is also caught in a way. So he openly says here, my nature is overpowered by the taint of pity. I am caught in helplessness. Kartanya dosha upahata swabhavah. Prichamitvam dharma sammuda chetaha. As to what is dharma in the context, I don't know. I'm confused. Therefore, I ask you, prichami. Yashreyasya nishitam bruhitanme. Tell me what is good for me, certainly, with certainty. He is asking for Shreya and not Preya. Preya means what is pleasant for us. Shreya means what is good for us. In life, we should always ask for what is good, not what is pleasant. The 18th chapter of Gita says, that which is pleasant in the beginning, nectarine in the beginning, ends up as poison. That which begins as poison, ends up as nectar. Just like the few of the beginning sessions of the Gita class starts off like poison. Some of us would feel, when is he going to come to verse number 11 of chapter 2? He's still in same words, going on and on. So it's poisonous in the beginning, but I assure you it will be nectarine in the end. So, he says, Eshreya, I want what is good for me. What is the right thing? What is good for me? Eshreya sya nishchitam. Tell me with certainty. Why? Sishyasteham shadi mam tvam prapannam. I have completely surrendered to you. Means what? I have made myself available to you completely. I think we discussed about when a Shishya goes to the Guru, he takes that dry sticks and all that, which is nothing but what? Completely I am available to you. The fire inside the wood, you can now ignite it. The self within me can be ignited by you. Just like the priest churns the wood and ignites the fire. But the fire is where? Inside the wood only. Similarly, in each one of us, there is Atma. But we are all now wet sticks. We are not dry sticks. Because we think, I know. I can handle. So when that goes and we submit ourselves to the Guru, then the Guru takes over and initiates us. And then slowly the spark becomes a conflagration and the entire vasanas are burned, then we can get to the self finally. So having said this in verse number 7, in 8 he further clarifies and says, to me it seems nothing external can solve the problem of my grief. So he says, achieving kingdom, not just ordinary kingdom, unrivaled kingdom, not just unrivaled kingdom on earth, unrivaled kingdom of the three worlds, cannot solve my grief. Means what? To me it seems nothing outside, external, can solve the issue. There is something within that I need to know, and where I have no access to, and where I am very sure and believe that you have access to. Right? In fact, you can look at it both ways. Somebody who is very close to you, very often you don't realize their greatness. Isn't it? You realize, in fact, your grandfather or father, what greatness he or she, you know, anybody in the family has, you may not realize. The whole world may be coming and learning from them. You may not learn. After he is passed away, then maybe after a few years you suddenly might realize. So very often, somebody who is very close to us, we don't realize the greatness. Arjuna was extremely close to Krishna. They were great friends. But now Arjuna has realized the greatness of Krishna. And he has realized his state of confusion as well. And therefore he surrendered to Krishna. And now, after he had become available completely, Krishna starts giving his sermon. So never ever give lecture to anybody. In fact, in the third chapter, Krishna directly mentions this. Lord directly mentions this. He says, never unsettle the minds of the ignorant. All that the wise person should do is, he should live his knowledge, he should execute his actions and make it attractive. I think there is a Chinese proverb which says, if you want to give advice, give biting your tongue. You can't talk. Means don't give. You understand? So, because communication depends upon the receptacle also. Right? You must have some receiver. You can transmit, but if there is no receiver, you can't speak to walls. So Arjuna has completely opened up now. Now Krishna starts. Shri Bhagavanu Vacha, Shri Bhagavanu Vacha, Ashochyanan Vashochyastvam, Ashochyanan Vashochyastvam, Prajnyavadamsya Bhashase, Gatasunagatasumsya, Nanushochanti Panditaah, Shri Bhagavanuvacha, Ashochyananvashochastvam, Prajnyavadamsya Bhashase, Gatasunagatasumsya, Nanushochanti Panditaah. Panditaha means wise people. Not just learned, but those who live as per their learning. Now, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Uvacha means said. Shri Bhagavan here refers to Lord Krishna, as you know. So Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Ashochyan Anvashochastvam Prajnyavadam Shabhashase. You are grieving for those who do not deserve to be grieved for. Straight away, he is saying, you are grieving for those who do not deserve to be grieved for. Yet you speak words of wisdom. Prajnyavadam. You are speaking words of wisdom. Which means what? You lack the depth. Superficially, you are using so many big words, but your words seem to lack the depth. You don't have wisdom in action. Please understand, wisdom and action is one and the same. When you are climbing a mountain and you reach the cliff, when you have reached the cliff and you know that you have reached the cliff, would you take one more step? If you take, then you do not know that you have reached the cliff. So the action is immediate once you have wisdom. That's the main difference between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom is action, knowledge is theory. Knowledge is got from outside, borrowed. Wisdom is developed by one's own reflection, thinking, independent thinking, original thinking. So here he says, there seems to be so many things you speak, you have spoken so much, but all those words are just empty words. We also hear so many things here and there. We also read so many books, but we don't digest. What matters in life is not how much food you ate, how much you digest. What is your capacity to digest? That's what matters. Isn't it? Just because you have been invited and the food is there and you are not sure whether tomorrow you will get it, you dump so much into your stomach, you cannot digest. So without reference to digestion, we are also reading so many books, so many lectures and so many things we do. Everybody is interested in covering the length. Hardly anybody is interested in going to the depth. So when Krishna is saying to Arjuna, don't think, okay, Krishna is nicely giving to Arjuna. He is actually talking to us. Arjuna is only a medium. Through Arjuna, the message is given to every one of us. Remember, we discussed this in when we did Jnana Shlokas. He says, Sarvopanishadho gavo dobra gopalanandanaha parto vatsa sudhir bhokta dubdam gita amritam mahat. Sarva upanishadaha gavaha. The entire Upanishads are cows. Isn't it? Sarvopanishadho gavo dobra gopalanandana. Gopalanandana is Krishna. Krishna is the cowherd boy, milker. Partha Vatsa means calf. Arjuna is the calf. In the presence of the calf, the cow gets inspired and gives milk. So Arjuna inspired Krishna, and Krishna milked the Upanishads and gave the Gita, which is the essence of Upanishads. Right? And then he says, Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdam Gita Amritam Mahat. This great Amrita of Gita is drunk by whom? Sattvic, pure intellect people. So even though Krishna milked because Arjuna inspired him, it is not only meant for Arjuna. Calf, how much milk does it drink? The milk is not just for the calf, it's meant for the entire universe. So Arjuna is only a medium. The calf inspired Arjuna. Calf inspired Krishna. Arjuna is the calf. So, this universal message, here Arjuna only becomes a medium. So remember, Krishna is talking to us directly. Prajna Vadam. You speak, you are trying to argue as if you are learned. As if you know, but you do not. That's what it means. Straight away, one nice whack he gets. Means lovingly, he gives it. So, you have been grieving for those who do not deserve to be grieved for. Now, does it mean that the Kauravas do not deserve to be grieved for? Therefore, what is the. Because they have given into unrighteousness. Since they have given themselves into unrighteousness, you should not grieve for them. Does it mean that?
No.
It means nobody on earth deserves to be grieved for. It's not only Kauravas, even good people. Because in Kaurava camp also, not everybody has given into unrighteousness. Bhishma and Drona, they don't agree with what Duryodhana has done or doing. But they are merely there because they believe that is their duty to be there. So, even though there are people like Bhishma, Drona and the other camp who are decided to give their life for the sake of duty, they also don't deserve to be grieved for. Nobody should be grieved. In other words, grief should not be there. When he says grief here, remember, it is not shoka. He is talking about affectation by shoka. Joy and sorrow, pain and pleasure will be part and parcel of life. Somebody with whom you have been relating for so many years, you have so many things that you have shared and your love and everything. Now that person has left, it is a little difficult situation, a painful situation, parting. But you should not allow that shoka to affect you.
But if you sorrow, will it not affect you?
Why can't you meet sorrow without getting affected? Means you have pain. Keeping that pain, you should continue doing your duty. Affect means it should not affect your daily duty. Things should not come to standstill. That's why, you know, when somebody dies also, what do? Countries keep their flags half hoisted and then they go about doing their duty. The cricketers also wear the black ribbon and sports people and then they go about their duty. You know, you have the shoka, you keep it in one corner, but continue doing your work. In fact, you dedicate your duties, keeping the values that they lived in mind for their sake. When a lot of cricketers, after they score a century or something, they say, I dedicate it to my father who's no more, or mother, you know, my friend, something like that. So you should continue. Stagnation is sin. Anything, see, for example, you commit a mistake because you were ignorant, you did not have proper data, whatever might be the reason, you committed a mistake. Having committed a mistake, if you repeat the mistake, it is sinful because you are stagnating. Mistake, having committed the mistake, you should learn from it and move, grow. But the problem is we continue and stagnate. That is sinful. Any area when you stagnate, it is sinful. So, he says, grief should not be there, first of all, if you have wisdom. Action may, there should be wisdom, I mean there should be no grief. That is the proof that you know. The proof is, you have emotions, but you never become emotional. You should have emotions. To have emotions is a virtue. But to become emotional is a sin. If you do not have emotions, then you become a piece of wood. If you have emotions and get affected by it, then you become an animal. You should have emotions, but you should have the emotions under your control, not become emotional. That is the sign of a wise person. A lot of people get scared. If I go to Bhagavad Gita class, if I go to Vedanta class, it will dry away my emotions. No. It will not dry away your emotions. It will, in fact, you will become more, you will be filled with more pure emotions. But you will not allow your emotions to overpower you. You will not allow yourself to get victimized. So firstly, straight away he says, Ashochyan Anvashochastvam Prajnyavadamsha Bhashase Gatasun Agatasun Na Anushochanti Pandita. The wise people do not grieve for those whose breath has gone, those whose breath is yet to go. Means what? For the living and the dead. nobody in their account deserves to be grieved for it. He is not saying why. The why he explains from first statement is made. Stop this grief. And the grief will stop only if you had knowledge. Only if you had strengthened your personality with that, then only you will be able to stop grieving. Otherwise you will grieve. It's like immunity. It's like shock absorber. When your vehicle doesn't have shock absorber, it will be subjected to shocks. If your vehicle has a proper shock absorbers, then you will not be subjected to shocks. Vehicle absorbs it. Understand? Any amount of shock, it is able to absorb. The tapas gives you that strength to absorb it. So a weak fellow will straight away say, let me have the antibiotics. Yet, strong fellow will say, let me see. Immunity create karenge. Isn't it? So in other words, wise people who have strengthened their personality with knowledge, they do not grieve. They are able to absorb the shock. So he says, they don't grieve for the living, nor the dead. Those who have come and those who are going, not gone. Those who have come means those who are going. All of us here are going category. Not those who have come category. Don't get scared. It's not going to happen next day. Might happen. We do not know. But then, you know, the going category, there is only two categories. Gone and going. The moment you said now, it has become then. Everything is in a constant flux of change. Constant flux of change. As you are seeing this glass here, it is changing. But you don't register it. The pebbles that you see today were once upon a time huge boulders or rocks maybe. Over a period of time, so much of corrosion and all that has happened. Now it has become a pebble. But when you see, you don't see the change happening. But everything is constantly changing. We get caught, we don't see it, they see it. That's the difference. They are seers. Seeing means you are seeing what is seen is apart from you. Why is it that you grieve? Because you become a part of it. When you are able to stand apart from it, then you will not grieve. Remember this. Apart, apart. That's the difference. Knowledge will make you stand apart. Bina knowledge, you become apart. That's the difference. Krishna is also standing there. He has high regards for Bhishma, Drona and all these people. But he is not grieving. A fellow who has no emotions, he doesn't grieve. Krishna has emotions, but he is not grieving. Why? Because he stands apart. He is a witness. Arjuna, you are not standing apart. You are becoming apart, getting involved. That's the problem. What will make you stand apart is the knowledge. And that is what Krishna is going to give now. He's going to explain why is it that we get involved, because we lack the self-knowledge. Ignorance of the self-knowledge makes us get involved. When we lack the knowledge of the waker, we get involved in the happenings of the dream. You could have eaten to your heart's content. In fact, you could have overeaten because you liked the gulab jamun, you had 10. You understand? And you slept off. And you are dreaming as if you are suffering from poverty and you have not eaten for 10 days. When you have you know, overeaten. In the dream, you are begging, you are suffering, and you know, oh, I've not got the food for so many days, what do? You know. You are totally caught up in the dream because you are not aware of any of your experiences as a waker. If only you knew, right, just now I had so many things, would you be involved in that hunger which is happening in the dream? This is because you do not know who you are. And this also, remember, I've said this before. You may say, "Acha, theek hai, what is the big deal here if I do not know who I am? I know chemistry, I know biology, I know how to make money, etc. What's the big deal if I do not know who I am?" Actually, there is nothing else to be considered as big deal other than this. Because when you do not know who you are, what would you call that person? You will answer very easily and immediately if I put it in a different way. If Lakshmi Narayanan, that's me, forgets that he is Lakshmi Narayanan and imagines himself to be Dr. Manmohan Singh, what would you call him? You're very refined. Lunatic fellow. Lunacy. You're being very refined. Disillusioned and all that. Lunatic case. When you do not know who you are, and you imagine yourself to be something else other than what you are lunatic. And nothing sensible can be done or achieved by a person who has lost all his senses. Isn't it? And in the world today, what are we trying to do? Without knowing who we are, having known many things about us, but not really who we are. What are we trying to do? We are trying to lead the other people, our children, society. We want to become the chairman of the company. I want to lead this and lead that. Huh? How can a blind lead blind people? A set of blind people are struggling to cross the road, and you are also a blind fellow coming there. Can you help them to cross the road? You must first have the eyesight. So the most essential aspect of life is self-knowledge. That is why Vedanta says there is only one priority in life, that is to know who you are. But you have all other things in your shopping list. When you go to a shopping mall, especially when you go to a supermarket, you make a list, right? So he says in life also you might have a list, but all you want to enjoy, but all you want to study and all that. In that, what is the last item? Self-knowledge, if at all. So when you go to a supermarket and he says, "Are they going to close in 5 minutes? Whatever you can pick up in 5 minutes, you pick up. Immediately what do? You pick up only those first few things, right? Because that is your priority. Similarly in life, if somebody comes and tells you, that's what Bhajagovindam is saying. Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajamudamate, Samprapte Sannihite Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrim Karane. When the appointed time comes, none of this will save you. And you do not know when that appointment comes. We know the date of birth. Do we know the date of death? No. So when that comes, this secular knowledge will not help you. You must know who you are. So he says, in the shopping list, first should be self-knowledge. So that you will give attention to it. And that self-knowledge is what he is going to elaborate now on. And because of the lack of that self-knowledge, all of us become a part of it and get involved and suffocate and suffer. It is as simple as that. You get involved, you suffer. You stand apart, you don't suffer. Nobody is saying, don't contact. But stand apart. The ability to be in it, yet not get involved. That is Vedanta. Why should we study Vedanta? What is it that Vedanta is going to do to me? The ability to do your actions and leave the result to the totality and not get involved. Mark Antony, after having known that his close friend Julius Caesar had been wrongly killed, murdered, and he comes to the scene and Brutus is giving a wonderful speech to the public. Not that I loved Caesar any less, but I loved Rome more. The public who are hailing Caesar, hail Caesar, hail Caesar, gets completely flattered by Brutus's speech, and is a great orator. So they all say, oh, what a noble soul this Brutus is. He had to kill his own friend for our sake. Oh, hail Brutus, hail Brutus. And then Mark Antony comes and says, he knows the scene is such that it's totally against him. So he comes and says, I also want to say something. I am also a close friend of Caesar. With your permission, can I speak? He asks Brutus. Brutus says, yes, speak. And he tells the public, we have given permission to Antony to speak, but he will not say anything against us. So you all must listen to him. And he walks off. No, because he's got the mob behind him, so he thinks nothing will go wrong, and he walks away. And Antony slowly starts, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me thy ears. I've come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. That's exactly the opposite what he wants to do. He says, I've come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. They're all honorable men. Every now and then he keeps on saying that. And then slowly he talks about Caesar, the will, and all that. Then they all forget about the will. Oh, Caesar has been wronged and all that. Then he says, you all have forgotten about the will that I spoke about. And then he says, in his will, Caesar had written this much for the, poor people and all that. So then, they all, my God, Caesar has been wronged and all. So he says, if I were Brutus and Brutus were me, I would know how to speak to encourage you for mutiny. Mutiny. But he's putting it that way. Then after saying everything, and everybody is like, charged up to avenge, finally he makes one statement, that is, mischief thou art afoot, take thou what course thou wilt. That's the most important statement. Mischief, I have started the mischief. What is my role? Whatever it is, I have done that. Mischief thou art afoot. Now let it take whatever course it takes. That is standing apart. That is objectivity. And that is the, if you ask me, maybe the only thing that Vedanta contributes. And that only thing is everything. And that makes all the difference. It's like you've been watching the program in the TV regularly, the chef has come and he regularly teaches you how to cook this item, that item, everything you've noted down, you bought the book, all the vegetables, everything has been cut and you prepared everything in the way he said. You made no mistakes. Only one mistake you made, forgot to add the salt. What happens to the food? Goes to the bill. Isn't it? Exactly like that. Everything we go after, but what we do not have is that ability to stand apart. Objectivity. Witnessing. Capacity to be a Sakshi Bhav. If you remember, I spoke about this in the first chapter. Arjuna has Mitru Bhav, then he has Shatru Bhav. But what he lacks is Sakshi Bhav. Sakshi means witnessing. To stand apart. And that standing apart will come only when you digest the knowledge and increase your awareness. Not otherwise. You can have the skill from the universities, intelligence, experience, everything, but if you lack objectivity, you're finished. That's why a lot of people, they might have achieved many things in life, but some small thing goes wrong, they go mad. By lacking objectivity. So, wise people have that ability to stand apart. Because they have the self-knowledge. And that self-knowledge is going to start. Natve vaham chatu nasam. Natve vaham chatu nasam. Natvam neme janadipaha. Natvam neme janadipaha. Nachaivana bhavishyamaha. Nachaivana bhavishyamaha. Sarve vayamataparam. Sarve vayamataparam. Natve vaham jatu nasam. Natvam neme janadipaha. Nachaivana bhavishyamaha. Sarve vayamataparam. Never indeed was I not. Never indeed was I not. Nor you. Nor these rulers of men. Also none of us will cease to be hereafter. Can you imagine the statement that he is making here? See, the words of the mystics, the words of the masters, are always something that comes from the depth. Something that wants to make us think. So, from the surface when you look, sometimes you say, what is this? It's nonsense. Or sometimes you feel this is obvious. But they are trying to communicate something much deeper. So here Krishna is talking to Arjuna. And what is he saying? Never indeed was I not. Nor you, nor these rulers of men. The other people who are assembled on the battlefield. Now, if he is saying, never indeed was I not, by that I he meant Krishna. Is that statement true? Nor you, by that you he meant Arjuna. Is that statement correct? Nor these rulers of men, by that he meant Bhishma, Drona and all these whipping people. Is that statement correct?
Not as
before you were born, you were not there. You know your date of birth. Uske pehle you were not there. You know, Arjuna knows Krishna's date of birth. Krishna knows Arjuna's date of birth. And yet Krishna is making this statement. So what is he trying to say? Obviously, by the I, by the you, by these rulers of men, he is not talking about Mr. Krishna, Mr. Arjuna, Mr. So-and-so. He is talking something deeper. Because this Mr., Mrs., Miss and all these things have come into existence. So when he says I, he is not meaning Mr. Krishna. Please remember this. The problem is, when we use the word I, we mean our body, our name, this personality with flesh and bone and thoughts and ideas. But when Krishna used the word I, he means Atma. That's why I keep on saying, Arjuna and all of us raise our questions from the surface, periphery. Krishna is giving answers, solution from the center. Periphery may, if you go on searching, you will not find the answer. And all of us are trying to find the answer in the periphery. You will not get it. Ashrams are included in the periphery. Just because you go and land up in an ashram doesn't mean you become immediately enlightened. You understand? So therefore, never indeed was I not. So that is why when any master speaks, you must pause and think, what is he trying to say? Because statement is so absurd from outside. Never indeed was I not. What does he mean? Before his date of birth, he was not there. Before my date of birth, I was not there. He's talking rubbish. No. Outside it looks as if they are talking nonsense. But inside there is a lot of meaning. A lot of people read Upanishads and they get confused and then they say these people are just prattling. They do not know what they are talking. No? So, never indeed was the I in you, the I in me, the I in any one of us ceases to be. Never indeed was a situation or scenario where the I was not there. Nor will it cease to be hereafter, having been. So now it is something that we need to think. When I am a child, I say, I am a child. And then when I grow up and become a boy, I say, I am a boy. When I grow up further and become an old man, I say, I am an old man. Child is different from the boy. Boy is different from the old man. But the I continues to be the same. The I was there in childhood. The I is there during the youth. The I will be there in the old age also. The I never leaves you. Does it leave you? Doesn't leave you. I never leaves you when you are in the waking state, when you are in the dream state, when you are in the deep sleep state also. In the deep sleep state, you experience anything? Do you experience anything? You say, there was nothing. When you say there was nothing in the deep sleep, next day morning when you wake up, you say, I experienced nothing. Who is reporting the experience of nothingness? There was somebody who is now coming back and reporting that that somebody experienced nothing. And that somebody is the I. So the I never leaves you. It is always there. Are you with me? Today you have wrongly understood this I. We even talked about this, I think, in this class only. When somebody is asked for their identity, who are you? You say, I am Mr. Chandra Gupta. Or Chandra so and so, so and so. Chandra is the name given for this personality, and that Gupta and all the other surnames that you get, what is it talking about? What you do. Isn't it? Means your community. You may not do that, you may do something else. But that community, what do you do? So the I today for us means what I do, not who I am. That's the problem. I am an engineer. Engineering is what you do. Who are you? I am so and so. That's your name. Then who are you? So the I today we have equated. I is equal to this. I is equal to this. All that the I has been equated is a wrong conclusion. The right conclusion is what? I is equal to changeless. When you say changeless, means what? Something which has no beginning, no end. Something which has no beginning, no end means infinite. Infinite means God. So, okay. Bhagavad Gita is actually over. The whole thing is explanation of this. We have equated the I to the wrong value, therefore we are suffering. Equated to the right value. When you want to take some loan from your house, you know, from your property, your business purpose or whatever, you call one bank fellow, he comes and assesses and he says, this is your value. You are not convinced. I think this guy is trying to cheat me. So what do? You get somebody else. And that fellow comes and, you know, and there is a little bit satisfaction here and there, and you say, okay, this is the value, and 80%, 70% they give you the loan. Valuation, we have valued us wrongly. you are worth much more. You are worth much more. Supposing there is a diamond that has been covered with some other metal. Inside, deep inside, there is diamond. Outside, it has been covered with mud, let us say, mud. You've made a beautiful pot made of mud, and inside there is diamond, which is not seen. You go and evaluate it, how much it will be?
I don't know.
500 rupees, 100 rupees, maximum in thousands maybe. But you break those portions of clay, and all that huge big portion of clay has been knocked off. Little small piece of your diamond you take and keep it on the table. Now that fellow will say, this is what? Millions and crores. Isn't it? Valuation. So farak, they say in Hindi, no? Kya farak karta? This is the farak. The difference. Never indeed I was not, nor you, nor these rulers of men. Also none of us will cease to be hereafter. So straight away he said, there is no question of dying. Arjuna, your problem is what, man? What is your problem? You are going to kill these fellows now. Now I am telling you, nobody dies. That's what he's saying. None of us will cease to be here after me. Nobody dies. Change the angle. That's all you need to do. When you are at the surface, huge buildings, differences you see. Some of them are small buildings, some of them are hut. And difference you see. When you fly from the aircraft window and you see, do you see any difference? Angle mein farak padta hai. That's all. Knowledge gives you to look at it differently. Farak, that is where it comes. When your neighbor's son does something, look at that fellow. How is he behaving? Can't imagine. Same thing when your son is doing, look at him, Swamiji, what is he doing? Kya farak padta hai? My son, neighbor's son. Angle. You listen. Angle matters. So, knowledge elevates you, takes you to that height. From there, if you see, you'll say, my God. You'll say, I'm sorry for my childishness. That's all. You will stop blaming anybody. This is the difference. So Krishna straight away says, if you have a problem with reference to death, in fact all of us, when you see somebody else dying, invariably deep inside in psychology, you are actually thinking of your death. That reminds you of your death. Aray, one day I'll also have to go. You understand? That kind of shakes you. So, this is because we have equated I is equal to finite. I, so therefore that equation matters. Have a right equation. If you have a wrong equation, then everything will be wrong. If you see the pot without the diamond in it, you never know. Padmanabha Swami Mandir mein, nobody knew there was so much of treasure. And suddenly, you understand. So much is there. Exactly the same thing Vedanta said. Get the I equated correctly. Re-evaluation. Wrong valuation you have done. So what do you have to do? You have to re-evaluate the whole thing. Krishna is simply re-evaluating the whole thing. He is not doing anything else. Many a times when you go to a Mahatma and you say, Swamiji, I am suffering from this problem, that problem, our husband wife goes and, we are about to break down, this relationship will not work, something. Simply the Mahatma just does the re-evaluation. Nothing is going to, do something and go into your brain and change the chemical, nothing like that. He is simply going to re-evaluate the whole thing, leaves it to you. Just the re-evaluation you feel, right, I have been stupid. Both of them realizes that I have been stupid, they come out saying thank you. What has he done? Simply re-evaluate. That's all. Like in Bhajagovindam, Adishankara says, Nari stanadhara nabhi dehum drishtva maha moha vesham yetan mamsava sadivikaram manasi vichintaya varam varam. Means, when you look at the opposite sex, you get so enamored. But what is it? It is nothing but modification of flesh and bone. Flesh and bone. Like that poem, even this will pass away. It's a beautiful poem by Theodore Tilton. It says, even this shall pass away. Once in Persia reigned a king who upon a signet ring, gray a maxim, strange and wise, fit for every change and chance, solemn words, and these were they, even this shall pass away. This king of Persia had a ring, signet ring, on that there was something carved. It said, even this shall pass away. The poet says, solemn words, not empty words. It gave him counsel at a glance, fit for every change and chance, solemn words, and these were they. Even this shall pass away. And he continues about friends, wealth and all. And then at a particular place he says, pillowed on the marriage bed, whispering to his soul, he said, no monarch has ever pressed a fairer bosom to his breast. Mortal flesh is must come to clay. Mortal flesh must come to clay. Even this shall pass away. He was a very wise fellow. He whispered to himself and he did not tell his wife. His whole life would have been, in Hindi they say, barbat, no? Should have gone like that. Understand? Whispering to his soul, he said, mortal flesh must come to clay. This, looking at it from a totally different angle, the whole thing opens up.
This is also standing apart.
Exactly. That's what makes you stand apart. For a period of time, you reflect. So when you go to a Mahatma, when you go to the Guru, he brings that maturity in him upon you, and slowly he makes you mature to look at it from a different angle, from the actually the right angle. So from a real angle, when you start looking at it, then you don't get enamored. So any statement from now on you will hear from Krishna, don't take it superficially. There is much, much deeper. Because you think, Arey, what is he talking? Doesn't he know that he was not there before this date? Arey, everybody knows. Krishna also knows that the Krishna's body, Arjuna's body, this ruler's body was not there. But the I was there. That is why he is talking about I. Aham. So what is that you are supposed to do? Think about the I, equate it correctly. When you have the right value for the I, only then all your problems will solve. All the problems today we have is because we have wrongly valuated the I. Everybody says, oh, you have lost weight. Oh, grey hair. Oh my God, you understand. So immediately what do? You look at the mirror and you also become very sad. What is this here? I'm getting old. You understand? So they are evaluating you from the point of view of your body. And you get caught in that evaluation. Then you say, I am finished, done. Somebody else is evaluating you from your back balance. And you are getting caught there. So what is the catch there? You have to maintain the status quo. That is a big catch. Coming to a status is itself a torture. You have to go through such an... You have to torture yourself to come to that status. Having reached that status, now everybody is evaluating you from that point of view. Therefore, what do? You get caught in that madness. And now to maintain that status quo, you go mad. Who asked you to fall for their evaluation? Don't you have an evaluation? We never do any evaluation. Never. If at all, we borrow evaluations from others. So everybody is saying, you have gone down, you have put on weight, you have grey hair. Means they are assessing you from the body. So you also think, I am the body. Or they say, what is happening? Today you are so depressed. Oh, you are so excited. So means they are assessing you from the mind. They are evaluating you from the point of view of your mind. Or the intellect. So you are allowing yourself to be evaluated and you believe that I is equal to body, I is equal to mind, I is equal to intellect. If I is equal to body, the body will be subjected to heat and cold. Therefore you will suffer. If I is equal to mind, mind will be subjected to joy and sorrow. Therefore you will suffer. If I is equal to intellect, intellect will be subjected to praise and censure. Honor and dishonor. That will affect you. So you have wrongly equated the I to body, mind, intellect, and then you are suffering. If you equate the I correctly to Atma, no suffering. Swamiji gives the example of a wooden stick, magnet, a piece of magnet, and a iron rod. You take an iron rod, wooden stick, and a piece of magnet. Magnet gets attracted to the iron rod. Does it get attracted to the wooden piece? Or the wooden piece doesn't get attracted to the magnet? Now you tie the wooden piece and the iron rod. Tie the rod. Now you take the combination, wooden piece and the iron rod. Will it get attracted? Yes, you will get so tensed up. It will get attracted. But even when the combination is attracted, wooden piece remains unaffected. So don't go about saying Atma is like a wooden piece. The example, one point is trying to be conveyed here, which is just like how in the combination, the wooden piece is not affected. Not influenced. Similarly, you, me, all of us are a combination. What combination? Spirit and matter. Spirit means God, principle, Atma, Brahman, all those words. Spirit, self in English. And matter, material components. What are the material components? Body, mind, intellect. Okay. Take for example the electrical bulb. The electrical bulb has a glass globe portion, right? And the glass case. Uske under there is a tungsten filament. And then electricity passing through the tungsten filament. When electricity passes through the tungsten filament in the glass case, then it brings light. Per se in electricity there is no light. Per se in the bulb there is no light. But when electricity passes there is light. Similarly, when the self contacts or the body mind intellect comes in contact with the self, there is life, manifestation, perception, action at the body level. Emotions, feelings at the mind level, thoughts, at the intellectual level. Right? So, Atma is the enlivening principle, just like how the electricity enlivens the bulb. And you and me are a combination, but in this combination also, the I is not the body. You very many times you say, my body is paining. My mind is disturbed. Right? When you say, my body is paining, you are using the word my, possessive pronoun. When you say my, it's like saying my watch. My body is like saying my watch. Watch is your possession. You are different from the watch. So when you say my body, you are saying body is different from me, I am different. And this I is something that has always been there, never leaves. So even though in the combination you may be appearing now as a combination, you are actually the Atma in the combination. Just the wise fellow knows. Since you and me do not know that, we get affected. Grief.
But you know, we are not aware of
what
I am. You are Atma. So, isn't our body, mind, and intellect a means to come aware? Huh? Isn't our mind, body, intellect what we have to use to?
Of course.
As a means to be aware.
That is what, huh? You use. Don't get used by them. Of course you should use. In fact, he is going to talk about it. Using the body only, you do karma yoga. Using the mind, you do bhakti yoga. Using the intellect, you do jnana yoga. You must use. You must not get, allow yourself to be used by them. Today, what are we doing? We are allowing others to use us. The body, mind, intellect is using us. We are not the masters. They are using us. We are at their mercy. Every day morning, when you go for a walk, you will see some people bringing their dogs, pet, you know. He says, he wants to go straight, the dog wants to go this side. Finally, he ends up going on the side, the dog goes. Very rarely, the dog goes on the side he wants to go. It's like that. You, all of us, are going towards the direction in which the mind, body, intellect takes us. All that Bhagavad Gita teaches is you drive them, don't allow them to drive you. We shall conclude. Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.